Why did you visit him? The road goes both ways.
I made a face. 'Cause we ain't friends no more. I corrected myself. I mean, we aren't friends anymore. She clicked her tongue. I heard you dumped a coke over the poor boy's head.
He brought it on himself. Himself, I said.
No one, Isagal, deserves a coke poured over his head.
Joe McCroy did, I said, straining upward. If you came over here to make me feel bad, then you can get.
Miss Emily put her hands on my shoulders and held me down.
Calm down, Isagal. I've heard Joe McCroy's side, but I haven't heard yours. Tell me what happened.
I sat up straight, looked right into Miss Emily's sky blue eyes, and said,
He called me a name, like they used to call my daddy.
Well, what name? She asked.
I shook my head.
I see you can tell me. I'm your best friend.
Frog Eyes, I mumbled.
What?
Miss Emily said.
Frog Eyes, I repeated. He said I looked like Peavy Lawson, that my eyes popped out like his.
Peavy Lawson, Miss Emily asked. I don't know Peavy Lawson.
He's ugly as a polecat, I said. Pop-eyed, straggly brown hair and freckles.
Well, you've got blonde hair and amber eyes, she said. I can't see the resemblance.
The likeness is in the pop, I said.
Miss Emily sucked in air, hesitated for a minute, then asked,
I've never seen you. Do you really pop out your eyes?
I lowered my head and didn't answer.
Speak up, Isagal. Tell me.
Come on, Icy.
Sometimes my eyes pop out, I began and stopped.
Then before I could think twice, the whole truth rushed from my mouth.
Joe McCroy and his cousin Janie Lou caught me behind Old Man Potter's barn popping out my eyes, and I called him a liar and dumped coke all over his head when I knew he was speaking the truth. I admit it. Sometimes my eyes pop out, but they can't help it. I mean, I can't help it. If I don't, my head feels like it'll explode and splatter all over the place.
I stopped, ate a mouthful of air, and continued.
I'm popping and jerking and repeating all the time. I can't help it. I hide in the root cellar and do it. I go down to the creek and do it. I did it in Old Man Potter's barn, and I'll probably do it when school starts. I'll do it because I can't help myself, and the whole school will turn against me, and I ain't gonna hang around for that. Do you hear me, Miss Emily? I ain't gonna stay here. No, ma'am. I'll carve me a canoe out of a cedar tree, and I'll sail it down to the Kentucky River and then up the Ohio, all the way to Louisville, where they love people who are different.
I heaved once, my shoulders shaken, and broke into tears.
Isagal, Miss Emily said, listen up, you won't have to do that. I promise, we'll find out what's wrong and make it right.
But you won't tell no one, you won't tell anyone?
I asked in a shrill voice.
On my word of honor, she said, I'll not mention it to a soul. We'll give you a little time. All children go through phases, little traumas, you know. You might just be going through one. After a while, you'll grow out of it. Now stand up and come here.
When I approached, she stretched out her arms and drew me to her, but it seemed that the harder Miss Emily tried to comfort me, the less comfort she seemed to give. I didn't believe Miss Emily could possibly understand what I was going through, because we were different. Even though she thought our orphan status made us the same, I knew it didn't. By 4, I had lost my parents. Miss Emily was 25 before hers died. When I was old enough, I wanted girlfriends who'd ask me to parties and boyfriends who'd take me to the movies. I wanted more than just respect. I wanted acceptance, the wink and nod of approval. In my home, I'd hang a mirror from each wall. I'd look proudly at myself in each. No, Miss Emily had not a clue as to what ailed me. She could stop herself from eating. I, on the other hand, couldn't help what I did. My urges controlled me. Nevertheless, in Miss Emily's eyes, we were the same. She was the orphan of ginseng. I was the orphan of Poplar Holler. If she had her way, she'd use our strangeness to unite us. She'd be Miss Emily Tanner, the fat woman of ginseng. I'd be Icy Sparks, the frog child from Icy Creek. Together, we'd become the orphaned outcasts of Crockett County. Just the thought of such comparisons made me shudder. Monday, the first day of school, took me by surprise. After all my worrying and waiting, it sneaked up on me like a leg cramp in the middle of a dream. Before I knew it, I was putting on my new red calico dress, and Mitanni was frying eggs and bacon. During the previous 2 weeks, I had kept my impulses in check. My interior thoughts had calmed down. No longer were they arguing the pros and cons of me, transforming themselves into a separate entity more powerful than I was. No major jerks, pops, or repetitions. I'd get little impulses, but they were more like ticks, wee little movements in my neck and head. Nothing like my previous goings-on in the root cellar. In fact, they were so subtle that no one noticed them. Still, I was worried. I never knew when the jerks would take over. When they did, people would find me out. "Go sit down," my grandmother said, as I tapped across the kitchen floor in my black patent leather pumps with white clip-on bows. My lace-trimmed socks were turned down and skimmed against my shoes. I felt the sharp-edged jabbing of the heel into my right foot and knew that a blister, round as a quarter, was forming. "I need some help," I said, approaching my grandmother from behind, holding a brush and green ribbons. "I see," she said, stepping back on my shoes. "Ouch," I said and jumped back. "I can't cook and fix your hair at the same time." Pouting, I walked over to the kitchen chair and slumped down. "I picked out these green ribbons." I put the hairbrush and ribbons on the table, then flicked the rubber bands that were wrapped around my wrist. "I'm nervous," I added. "It's my first day and I want to look pretty." "You got butterflies," my grandmother said. "If you eat a good breakfast, you'll feel better." I bit my lip. "I ain't hungry," I said. "I'm too scared to be hungry." "Well, school ain't never bothered you before," my grandmother said, pulling biscuits from the oven. "What's got you in such tizzy? You've been feeling better for weeks." I picked up my glass of tomato juice, stared at the thick red concoction, took a sip, but, feeling queasy, set it down. "Janie Lou said that the fourth grade teacher is mean," I replied. "Janie Lou?" my grandmother said, arching her eyebrows. "You know, Joel McCroy's cousin," I explained. She nodded. "So?" she said, lifting her eyebrows again. "So," I continued, "she spanked Prissy Evans last year for picking her nose and slapped Maggie Mullins for nibbling on her nails. Hit her hands with a ping pong paddle. Janie Lou said that she's from Chicago and came all this way to save our minds and souls. I mean, she don't even like it here." "Nonsense," Mitanni interrupted. "You don't even know the woman. You ain't once mentioned her Christian name." "Her name is Mrs. Stilton," I said confidently, "and she's a Catholic, too," I blurted out, knowing full well that bit of news would worry my grandmother. I looked right into my grandmother's eyes. Neither of her eyebrows was lifted now. She was listening, all right. "She believes in the Pope and practices her singing every day because she's just hankering to go to Italy and audition for the Pope's choir. Even Janie Lou's preacher has heard about her. One Sunday, he warned the whole congregation, 'If you don't watch out, you too will be following false prophets and worshiping idols.' Right then and there, Janie Lou knew who he was referring to. Janie Lou calls her Mrs. Zombie, and do you know why?" I didn't give Mitanni a chance to reply. "'Cause her irises are so dark you can't see her pupils. She looks like one of the walking dead." Mitanni blinked twice, shook her head, and scolded. "Don't believe everything you hear." Then she snatched up a knife and began buttering a biscuit. "Now drink your juice." "I told you," I sassed. "I ain't hungry." My grandmother grabbed my plate and marched toward me. "Now listen up, Miss Icy Sparks. In this here life, we all got things we don't want to do. All of us have our bad days, so don't go taking yours out on me." She plunked down my breakfast. Staring at me were two over-easy eggs, three slices of bacon, and a biscuit. "I'm sorry," I mumbled, then stabbed an egg with my fork and slowly brought a piece of it toward my mouth. "I'm as jittery as a horse." I choked on the rubbery sliver of egg white, groaned, and spewed tomato juice and egg all over the table. "I say, are you okay?" I shook my head, leaped up, and raced to the bathroom. Mitanni chased after me. "I say, are you okay?" she asked. I heaved over the toilet, unable to answer. Then, totally exhausted, I lowered the lid, folded my arms on top of it, and plopped down my head. "I see, are you all right?" she asked again from the doorway.
Say something, please.
I stood up. I'm okay, I muttered, shuffling to the door. I feel better now, I said. Will you braid my hair? I asked, extending my wrist with the rubber bands wrapped around it. I want to wear my new ribbons. Mitanni put her hand on my forehead.
No fever, she pronounced. Just nerves.
She took my hand, led me over to the sink, where she turned on the faucet and splashed cold water over my face.
I don't understand it, she said as she dried my skin. School ain't never bothered you. By fall, you're aching to go.
She combed her fingers through my hair.
Stay right here, she said. I gotta fit your hairbrush and ribbons. Don't worry none. We'll make you look real purty.
I stared at my pale face in the bathroom mirror. My eyes were bleached out and dull. My hair seemed wilted and dead. Like a dead cat's hair, I thought. One that has been dead in a ditch for weeks. Suddenly, I understood why Miss Emily hung cheesecloth over her mirror. But I had no cheesecloth, and watched dismally as my grandmother, all smiles, scurried into the bathroom and, with hairbrush and ribbons, went eagerly to work. Peavy Lawson was the first person I saw. He and his frog eyes occupied the first seat of the first row near the door. When I entered the room, he jumped up and waved his hands at me. They looked like frog's feet, greenish-yellow, webbed and slimy. I blinked and looked again, but he had hidden them in his lap. Now he winked at me, his frog eyelids flying up and down like blinds. A wide, thin grin covered his face. I tried to find his lips, but couldn't. Frogs, I guessed, didn't have lips.
Howdy, Arthy,
he lisped the C-Y. When he spoke, his tongue, slender and blood-red, shot out a full 5 inches.
Howdy, Arthy,
he lisped again, the tip of his tongue curling up when he spoke. I concentrated on my own eyes, tried to sink them way back into my skull, and said, Pavy Lawson, why don't you jump back into that pond where you belong? He popped out his eyes, then rolled them up into his head.
We can jump together, he said.
I snapped my eyes shut, unable to tolerate the sight of him, and blindly shuffled forward. When I bumped into the large wooden desk and heard the class laughing, I opened my eyelids and slid into the first empty seat I could find. The minute Peavy Lawson leaned way over into the aisle, flashing me a huge froggy grin, I knew that I had picked the wrong desk since I was only a few seats down from him. My face reddened, and I stuck out my tongue. I opened my hands, turned my palms upward, and spit into both. Then I slapped them together and rubbed them fiercely back and forth, all the while staring into Peavy Lawson's amphibian eyes.
Hey, you young lady, you're Icy Sparks, aren't you?
I heard the voice and turned my head toward the classroom door.
What in the world are you doing? Mrs. Stilton barked. I'm beginning to question Miss Palmer's high opinion of you.
I looked at Mrs. Stilton's long nose and her squinty black eyes and was too frightened to speak. A long quiver started from the nape of my neck and shook me down my spine to the tips of my toes. This ain't no jerk, I thought. This is just plain fear. My desk began to bang against the floor.
Icy Sparks,
Mrs. Stilton screamed. I clamped my hands over my ears.
Remove those hands, young lady.
I froze.
Remove them or else, she warned.
Still, I couldn't move.
Okay, you asked for it, she said.
Deliberately, she walked toward her desk and pulled out, inch by inch, the top drawer. In slow motion, she picked up a ping pong paddle, then held it up high for the class to see. I gasped, but my hand stayed put. With the paddle held upright in her hand, she strode toward me. I abruptly closed my eyes, and she disappeared like melting celluloid blotting out an actor when the film projector breaks.
You think you can make me disappear? She said.
I pressed my hands against my ears.
You think you can shut me out?
My eyelids were tightly shut.
You think I'm not important?
I held my breath.
Well, listen up, she screamed. Mrs. Eleanor Stilton is your teacher, and you'd better accept it.
I bit my bottom lip and sat rigidly still.
Whack!
The paddle burned my right hand.
Do you hear me? Whack!
It burned my left.
Whack, whack, whack!
My ears tingled. My jaw ached. Do you understand? I tried to speak. Syllables dissolved. Whack, whack, whack. My face melted. My hands fell from my ears. My eyes flew open.
Who is your fourth grade teacher? The pointed face asked.
You are, I muttered.
And what is my name?
The voice thundered. Mrs. Stilton, I said.
Finally,
the voice gasped relief.
Students, this was your very first lesson. I hope you've paid attention.
Yes, ma'am, resounded the frightened voices of Mrs. Stilton's fourth grade class, the loudest of which was mine. By lunchtime, the enormity of my situation had seeped into my mind like the odor of turnip greens permeating the air. I understood that some awful harm was confronting me. From now on, every answer I gave would have to be precise. Every word would have to be calculated, ensuring my survival. If I didn't control myself, the urge to jerk, pop, and repeat words would take over, and something horrible, the worst thing ever to happen to me, would occur. At the table, Emma Richards sat beside me. She held her nose while she slipped a smidgen of turnip greens into her mouth.
I can't taste them this way, she said.
Well, don't eat them, I told her.
I gotta, she said. Mrs. Stilton heard me telling Sally Mae how much I hate this stuff, and she said I had to eat all of it. Every mouthful of it, she told me. I seen what she done to you.
Then you best eat up, I said, forking down mouthfuls of greens, hoping to show Mrs. Stilton what a good girl I really was. When she passed by my plate, it would be sparkling clean. I like greens, I said, shoveling more into my mouth. Pokeweed, collards, mustards. Patani said that I'm like Essie, our milk cow, 'cause I like greens more than meat.
I like chicken and dumplings, Emma said. That's about the only thing I really like, except for candy.
I like pool candy, I said. Miss Emily Tanner makes the best in the world.
It's too gooey, Emma made a face. I like proper sweets like those chocolates and Valentine boxes.
I stuffed more turnip greens between my lips and with a full mouth proclaimed,
I like blackberry cobbler. My grandma makes the best.
A hand tapped my shoulder and I glanced up.
You like what?
Mrs. Stilton asked.
I like vegetables, I said, with the glob of greens mashed in my mouth.
I smiled and tilted my plate upward so that she could see how clean it was becoming.
Mrs. Stilton popped me on the shoulder. You're talking with your mouth full, she said, and ruining everybody's meal.
I quit smiling, closed my mouth, and swallowed.
Patani calls me a cow, I tried again, 'cause I like vegetables more than meat.
Then you'd be called a vegetarian, Mrs. Stilton said. And that's not healthy.
Well, that don't mean I don't like meat, I stammered. If someone gives me meat, I'll eat it. I ain't spoiled. There's hungry people in China.
There are hungry people in these parts, Mrs. Stilton said.
Yes, ma'am, I conceded. There are hungry people all over this country.
Not in Illinois, Mrs. Stilton said, wheezing air through her nose. We don't have hungry people in Chicago.
I vigorously shook my head.
Oh, no, I said. Chicago doesn't have any hungry people.
Finish your ham, Mrs. Stilton ordered, pointing to the pink square on my plate. You need some protein.
I smiled again, stabbed a piece of ham, and poked it into my mouth. Mrs. Stilton nodded and continued her walk down the aisle.
That was close, Emma Richards said.
I kept on eating. Cutting my ham into little cubes, popping them between my teeth, chewing and swallowing. I ate my cornbread and also the little packet of saltines on my tray. I didn't know what the crackers were for, but I ate them anyway. Then I downed the cherry pie and drank my carton of milk. Pleasing Mrs. Stilton was going to be hard work, I thought. Good grammar, manners, and answers all the time. Phew, I said, wiping my forehead. And school had only just begun. The weeks at school passed with Mrs. Stilton's eyes following me. Her gaze accompanied my every step, and I felt like she was a sleek black panther ready to pounce.
Don't press down so hard, Emma Richards whispered to me from across the aisle. You're gonna make a big hole in your paper. I'm nervous, I whispered back, looking up to see if Mrs. Stilton was sitting behind her desk.
She wasn't.
That woman's always studying me, I said.
Emma pursed her lips and twitched her nose.
That ain't true, she said prissily. Your mind is just playing tricks on you. Then how come she's all the time catching me at something?
I asked her, ferociously erasing the T in today.
How come I'm the one who gets in trouble? Well, you ain't the only one.
Emma Richards screwed up her face and simultaneously shrugged her shoulders.
She gets mad at Lane, too.
Lane Carlson, I poked out my tongue.
He don't count. That big sissy deserves everything he gets.
From the back of the room came a high, hysterical giggle. Lane's.
If a sissy touches you, you turn into his opposite,
Emma said, looping the tail of her Y.
I don't believe you,
I said a little too loudly, my eyes instinctively scanning the classroom. Mrs. Stilton still nowhere in sight.
If Lane Carlson rubs against you, she said, clicking her tongue against the top of her teeth, then you'll change into a tomboy.
I made a burping noise with my lips.
Well, that don't scare me none, I told her, tossing back my head, 'cause I already do tomboy things.
Emma slid her paper over to the edge of her desk.
Look at mine, she said. Ain't my penmanship fancy?
Them curlicues look like vipers, I said, like little baby snakes. I stretched out my neck, thrust my tongue between my lips, moving it sideways, and hissed like a snake. Emma ran her tongue along her top lip.
You might even grow a mustache, she shot back. It'd come out yeller to match your hair.
I pressed my index finger against my mouth.
Shush, I warned her. You're gonna get me in trouble.
Snatching her paper away from the desk's edge, Emma daintily crossed her feet, one ankle over the other, and sighed loudly.
I sighed also, even louder. You best learn to write like me, I said, pushing my paper in her direction, glancing down, and realizing too late that my handwriting was a disgraceful mess.
Black smudges all over, a big hole right through the center.
At least my penmanship ain't scary, I said. It don't look like a bed of baby copperheads ready to bite, it's...
Mrs. Stilton's gradebook crashed down. I jumped, watching my paper disappear beneath its black cover.
Icy Sparks, do you think you can write and talk at the same time?
I nodded, then retracted, urgently shaking my head.
No, I don't think you can, Miss Sparks.
Mrs. Stilton's eyes were on me, greedily eating a hole right through me. With her fingertips, as though my paper were dirty, she slipped it out from beneath her gradebook and lifted it up high for the class to see.
A hole, she announced.
Then, like a magician, she withdrew a pencil propped behind her ear, aimed it at my paper, and poked it through the gap I'd made when I erased my T. The class laughed. Above them all, I could hear Lane Carlson's high-pitched snickering.
Emma, Mrs. Stilton said, would you please show the class your work?
Yes, ma'am,
Emma rose, stood in the aisle beside her desk and held up her paper, shifting it from side to side so that everyone could see.
Now turn around, Mrs. Stilton ordered her. I want the students in the back to get a look. Lucy, what do you think of Emma's work?
Mrs. Stilton said.
It's pretty,
Lucy replied, grinning.
And you, Erwin?
Mrs. Stilton said. What do you think?
I like all them lassos, he said. They remind me of cowboys.
And what do I think of this?
Mrs. Stilton asked, still clutching the pencil, waving it back and forth, my paper flapping through the air.
I'll show you,
she said, walking toward her desk, the eyes of every student shifting to the trash can.
This is what I think of sloppiness,
she said, ripping my paper off the pencil, crumpling it up into a tight little ball before tossing it into the wastebasket. Stiff in my seat, I shoved my feet against the tiled floor, trying to control the little tremors that were beginning in my legs.
I got my eyes on you, said Mrs. Stilton, pointing at me, her fingernails inching outward like claws. And little girl, don't you forget it.
Whereupon she turned her back to us, and with chalk in hand, began putting on the blackboard a string of math problems, neatly lined up and perfectly spaced apart. Emma Richards giggled as she sat back down, but the rest of the class was silent. Not even Lane Carlson squeaked. Suddenly, across the aisle from me, two seats down, P.V. Lawson made a lisping sound.
Ithy, he whispered, his voice low, his eyes bulging. I like your handwriting best.
Breaking a smile, he picked up his paper for me to see. It was a black smudged mess, riddled with holes. The only thing I could do was fold my arms on top of my desk and hide my head inside them. Mrs. Stilton cleared her throat.
In my mind's eye, I saw her neck stretching up like a chicken's and imagined her Adam's apple bobbing up and down. After lunch, she had instructed us to put our heads upon our desks while she read to us. "From now on, we'll do this every day," she said. "It'll help with your digestion." From the satchel beside her chair, she'd pulled out a book. This is a good sign, I thought, nestling farther down in my seat, closing my eyes. Last year after lunch, Miss Palmer had also read to us. She had read The Secret Garden, The Little Prince, and other books. It was my favorite time during the day, even more enjoyable than recess because all I had to do was listen. "The Lottery by Shirley Jackson," Mrs. Stilton began. She read to us about a peaceful little town, not unlike Ginseng, where every summer the townsfolk gathered together in the square to participate in a drawing. "So this will be a happy story," I decided, wiggling my toes, feeling them relax inside my patent leather shoes. Janie Lou had told me that St. Michael's Church in Dewberry, where Mrs. Stilton worshipped, had bingo every Saturday. "Catholics love gambling," Janie Lou had said. So suddenly it seemed right and proper that Mrs. Stilton would be reading a story about a lottery. In the story, the children were the first ones to come to the square. They were out of school for the summer and had too much free time on their hands. Clearing her throat, Mrs. Stilton lowered the book, looked up at us, and asked, "Class, does this little town sound familiar?" I lifted my head slightly above my folded arms and saw an eerie smile creeping over her face. "Does this little town sound familiar?" she repeated. "Yes, ma'am," the student said. "Yes, ma'am," I mumbled, saliva painting my arm.
"Why?" Mrs. Stilton asked.
"Because it's small like ginseng," Lucy Daniels said.
"What else?" Mrs. Stilton asked.
"Because it has coal and farmers and tractors," Erwin Leach said.
I wondered if Shirley Jackson was from a small Kentucky town. I sat up and raised my hand. Ginseng was bigger than the town in her story, but still they were alike.
"What is it, Icy?" Mrs. Stilton said.
"Is Shirley Jackson from Kentucky?"
Mrs. Stilton scowled. Ignoring me, she said, "Class, I just wanted to see if you were paying attention." I'll have to be more careful, I thought, again resting my head in my arms. Mrs. Stilton was reading to us, but that didn't mean she had changed. I closed my eyes again, and my mind drifted off, conjuring up my own fantasies. Ginseng could have its own drawing, and it would be fun, grand even, much better than the one in the story. A convertible from Don Scoggins' used car lot would go to the winner. In my mind's eye, I saw the whole of Ginseng gathering around the courthouse on a clear, sunny morning. Mitanni and Patanni were there, along with Miss Emily. Even Mamie Tillman was present. She was smiling, and her stomach was flat. Mayor Anglin, who was in charge, put his finger to his lips and hushed the crowd.
"Citizens of Ginseng, I now declare the drawing open," he said in a serious voice.
I fancied myself waiting for the winner's name to be called. Nervously, I stood on one foot, then the other, not expecting to win. Never had my luck been good. Still, I was hopeful. I imagined Mitanni and Patanni with their fingers crossed and saw Miss Emily holding her breath. Slowly, Mayor Anglin lifted the top off an old Cracker Barrel, inserted his fat hand inside, swished around the slips of paper, and dramatically selected one. His face contorted as he held the slip, arm's length from his eyes, swallowed deeply, and grandly announced,
"The winner of this year's Chevy convertible is Miss Icy Sparks."
Feeling lightheaded, I slumped forward.
"Come on up here,"
he yelled with a broad wave of his arm. Patanni grabbed me under the armpits and pulled me up while Miss Emily retrieved an ice cube from her cup and pressed it against my forehead. Quickly, I revived. With my head held high, I walked forward, stopping reverently in front of Mayor Anglin and extending my palm.
"Congratulations," he said, before dropping a set of silver keys into my hand.
Eagerly, my fingers wrapped around them. All at once, my baby blue convertible was whipping around mountain curves. With my blonde hair streaming behind me, I drove like a champion, the fourth grade class chasing after me, yelling, "Icy, can we go? We want to ride too." I was picturing all of this, feeling the cool wind against my face, basking in the adulation of my classmates, delighting in my newfound luck, when out of nowhere, Mrs. Stilton coughed and brought me back. Her powerful voice was describing a woman in the story who had forgotten what day it was. When she finally remembered, she came running to the square. That woman is just like me, I decided. I wonder if she's headed for trouble. She forgets time like I do when I'm out exploring. But at least I don't keep all of ginseng waiting, just Mitanni at supper time. Fascinated, I listened as Mrs. Stilton continued. Her voice began to weave in and out like a distant echo in my head. Abruptly, she quit reading. For 10 seconds, she was quiet. Then, in a determined voice, she carefully pronounced the last 2 words in the sentence. "Humorlessly and nervously," she read, twisting her mouth as though exercising her lips. She lifted her giraffe neck and surveyed the room. "Humorlessly and nervously," she repeated emphatically. "Children, you must remember those words," she said, scrutinizing the students up front. "Now, what words are they?" she asked.
"Humorlessly and nervously," those up front responded.
"What words?" she demanded.
"Humorlessly and nervously," the whole class said.
But not me. I kept my mouth shut. Humorlessly and nervously were already stuck in my mind. Unlike the others, I didn't need to repeat them. The minute I heard both words, I knew they were clues. Ominous clues hinting at disaster. It was then I realized that Mrs. Stilton meant to teach us a lesson. She meant to teach me a lesson, and out of all the stories ever written, she had chosen this one, a story about a town just like ginseng, to do so. Horrified, I listened, dreading each word as the story unfolded. Eager to hear what would happen next, every fourth grade head but mine shot up. Craning their necks, they leaned forward, but I didn't. Instinctively, I tucked my head between my arms, recoiling from the striking distance of her words. Before I knew it, my mind was like a movie running backward. The baby blue convertible moved faster and faster in reverse, its tires sucking in the dust. My body bolted from the seat and flew into the crowd. My fingers burst open, sending the keys upward toward Mayor Anglin's open hand. Faster and faster my mind raced, rewinding all the way back until the drawing was about to begin again.
"And the winner of this year's prize is Virgil Bedloe," Mayor Anglin announced. "Virgil, come get your blackberries."
"Blackberries," I said, looking puzzled, turning around, trying to find the car. "That's the prize?" I reached out to touch my grandfather's hand, but he wasn't there. Instead, he was moving slowly toward the courthouse steps where Mayor Anglin stood. An old tin bucket with a familiar dent in its side was now sitting on top of the cracker barrel. It was overflowing with plump, juicy blackberries. All of a sudden, I heard a faraway buzzing noise in the tin bucket quivering. Ever so slightly, its bottom thumped against the wood. The glossy skin of the blackberries trembled in the sun. Frightened, I put my hands over my eyes. Black and white dots seeped through the cracks between my fingers, but still the buzzing grew louder. Louder and louder it became, as loud as a hive of swarming bees. And even though my eyes were covered, I could clearly envision them, 1,000 golden specks wrapped in black, an ear-splitting buzz consumed with rage. "No, Patani, don't take that prize," I thought. I jerked my head upward. The smiling faces of my classmates alarmed me. "Don't they understand?" I thought as my heart beat wildly. "Why are you listening to her?" I wanted to cry.
"Class, I'm getting to the end," Mrs. Stilton said, raising her head, staring at us. "Everyone better be listening."
Agitated, I twisted around and spotted Emma Richards' big brown eyes, unaware, cheerful, her lips primly upturned. Naturally, she didn't understand. I twisted again and saw Peavy Lawson's froggy eyes. He didn't have a clue. I shook my head. The faint trace of a whisper was forming inside my skull. Fearful, I listened closely and thought I heard Patani talking to the crowd.
"I don't deserve this prize," he said. "It belongs to Icy. Icy is the winner."
"Please God," I thought, "I don't want to win." Clamping my lips together, I held in my breath. "Emma ain't had a chance. Let her win," I said to myself. "Lucy Daniels should be the winner. See that smile on her face? Look at Peavy Lawson, grinning over there. He loves blackberries. And so does that sissy Lane Carlson. Let him be the winner, but not me."
I stared at my classmates, their faces swelled with anticipation. They didn't understand. My hands began to sweat profusely. The veins in my temples throbbed. A grinding panic rushed over me.
"Let us finish," Mrs. Stilton buzzed.
Her voice rose to a high pitch and whirred against my ears. Terrified, I scrunched down in my seat. Emma Richards snickered and pointed at me. Folding my arms on my desk, I buried my face inside him and imagined Pitani coming toward me.
"It's yours," he said, holding out the tin bucket, gripping its handle. "All yours."
Flinching, he took another step closer. That's when I saw him, the 1,000 pinpricks covering his body. Behind him, a black cloud hummed hysterically. Undulating ever so subtly, it changed shapes. Snake-like at first, then round like a giant hotcake, zigzagging past him, descending, blotting out Mayor Anglin and the courthouse steps.
"No, Pitani, put it down," I thought. "I don't want to win."
"Hide," my thoughts yelled. "Protect yourself," they demanded, as I pressed my knees against the desk, swatting the air with my hands.
"Frog eyes," my thoughts buzzed.
"Crazy," they hummed. "Little Miss Frog eyes," they droned.
"All of you hate me," I spluttered into the desktop, my lips tingling against the wood.
Right then, a book slammed down.
"I see sparks," Mrs. Stilton warned. My knees shot up. The desk rattled on the floor. "Can't you be still?" she said, jerking out her desk drawer.
With a thud, the drawer closed shut.
"Are you crazy?"
Her footsteps clicked toward me.
"I'm warning you,"
she said, slapping the ping pong paddle against her hand.
"I don't want to win," I said, trembling.
Her footsteps thumped closer and closer.
"Are you crazy?" she repeated, coming to a stop beside me.
I felt her hot breath on my skin, her face inches from my neck. The paddle crashed against my desktop. My body shuddered.
"Why me, Daddy? Why me? Why not them?" I groaned,
straggling my head with my arms.
"You are crazy," she hissed.
"No, no," I said, moaning.
"Why me?"
I cried, feeling the burn of the paddle against my skin.
"My God, Daddy, the stings, the stings,"
I muttered, accepting my fate. Mrs. Stilton took me to the nurse's station, which was a little room beside Principal Wooten's office, and told Nurse Coy that I had become hysterical during reading time and fallen out of my desk and onto the floor.
"Look at those red blotches," she said, pointing to the marks on my arms. "This child isn't normal."
She shook her head and glanced down at her watch.
"I must get back," she said with syrupy concern. "My children need me."
Nurse Coy, who wasn't really a nurse but had once worked as an aide at a nursing home in Harlan, gently squeezed my hand in her wrinkled, claw-like fingers, walked me over to the day couch, and told me to lie down. I did so obligingly. I would have done anything to stay out of class and away from that lying, Pope-craven, Chicago-born maniac. I knew that I hadn't behaved exactly right, but I also knew a fall hadn't caused those crimson smears on my skin. Only 5 minutes ago, I was Mrs. Stilton's prey. Through me, she had played out her fantasies. She had whacked my skin with that ping-pong paddle of hers, each whack a hornet sting.
"Would you like some Coke?" Nurse Coy asked. "A little Coke'll help."
"Yes, ma'am," I murmured. Nurse Coy patted my arm, which dangled over the edge of the couch, and hobbled out the door toward the cafeteria, where she kept cases of Coke in supply. On her way, I overheard her talking to the janitor, Mr. Sedge, one of the few Negroes in ginseng.
"Dooley, would you like some Coke?" she asked.
"No, ma'am," he said. "Remember you give me a Coke a little while ago? I thank you, though."
Nurse Coy laughed awkwardly.
"I remember now," she said. "I fixed you a Coke with ice."
"Yes, ma'am," Dooley said. "Coke with ice. On a hot day like this, it sure tastes good."
"Icy Sparks is in there," she said. "I'm on my way to fix her some Coke. That's why I asked if you wanted some."
"I know you didn't really forget," Dooley said.
"Coke is the best medicine," Nurse Coy said. "It'll cure a stomach ache and ease the pain of a headache, bellyache, and heartache," she explained. "I wish I had invented it."
"I bet you do," Dooley said. "If you did, you'd be a rich lady by now."
Nurse Coy laughed again and padded down the hall. I closed my eyes and tried to calm down. After getting banged about, My confused mind was tired and my thoughts were mostly quiet. Still, every so often, the battle inside myself would rouse, and I'd think, Icy Gal, this is war. Mrs. Stilton is the enemy, and she deserves a good battle.
How was school? Mitanni asked as I slouched through the door.
I dropped my satchel on the floor and slumped down on the sofa.
I got sick, I said. I spent the afternoon in the infirmary.
Well, I declare, Mitanni said, coming toward me with an open palm.
Why, you're as cool as a cucumber.
Nervously, I looked down at my arms. The blotches, thank heavens, were gone. I ate too much for lunch, I said, and got a bellyache. Mitanni sat down at the other end of the sofa.
Lie back and give me your feet, she said, patting her thighs.
I plopped my feet in her lap. She unbuckled my shoes and slipped the socks off.
Child, your feet are swollen, she said,
and began rubbing my skin, sliding her fingers up and down from the tips of my toes to my heels.
They're hot, too.
Well, maybe I should stay home tomorrow, I said, sighing. My feet need to rest.
Well, you wore tennis shoes all summer, my grandmother said. These feet are just aching to get out of those school shoes.
Can't I stay home? I asked. Mitanni ran her fingers over my toes.
I see, what's wrong with you? She said. You used to be so happy at school.
A person can't be happy all the time, I said.
Well, that's a fact, she replied. But I see, you can't go around voiding things.
Daddy did, I said.
Your daddy didn't like working in the mines, Mitanni said, but he never stopped.
Well, he should've, I said. He should've had more fun before he died. I swallowed hard and whispered, before he died that awful way. Mitanni was quiet for a second, then took a deep breath and said softly,
Child, your daddy's up in heaven now.
She tilted back her head, her eyes looking upward.
Up there with your sweet mama. Their spirits are happy and whole, sugar darling. All of the pain in their bodies was left behind.
Are you sure? I asked.
Without a doubt, she said firmly, staring into my eyes. I reckon the only thing that can make him happier is knowing you're happy, too.
I turned over and buried my head in the red-flowered pillow.
How do you feel now? My grandmother asked, tickling the soles of my feet.
I pressed my face into the pillow and tried not to giggle.
I hear you, Mitanni said. If that's a giggle, you ain't too sick.
I shook my head and giggled louder and louder as Mitanni teased each foot. The next day, I readied myself for school. At 5 a.m, I rose and stood in front of a small oval mirror that hung above the white dresser in a corner of my bedroom. For 45 minutes, I stared at my reflection and prepared my face. Every day from now on would have to be planned. All my spontaneity would have to be subdued. Miss Emily had always said,
Icy Gal, I love your energy. I just love how you play.
But today, my playfulness would go into hiding. Control would become my new calling card. I breathed in deeply and threw back my head. Then I sucked in my cheeks and tried to sink my eyes. My eyes appeared smaller, more sunken in. In fact, they even seemed a different color, less yeller, more earth brown. Next, I wiggled my jaw several times, clamped down my teeth, and tried to freeze the stern look that had settled into my chin. But when I whispered at the mirror, my real face broke through, and once more I was Icy Sparks, playful girl. I brushed my hair so long and hard that little distinct rivulets of yellow trailed down my back. Then I twisted it into a ponytail and straitjacketed it with a rubber band. Finally, from the wardrobe, I selected my ugliest, plainest dress, dingy brown with no frills, and scruffed up brown loafers to match. I dressed carefully, making certain that even my underwear was yeller and old. I would make myself solid, dark, and impenetrable like the trunk of an old tree. From now on, this would be me. It would camouflage the urges that lived inside me, fence in the rage that triggered these urges, and cordon off my fear. No one ever again would see the real me.
Well, you sure look drab, Mitanni said when I sat down at the table. Put on that pretty blue dress I bought you.
Peavy Lawson's giving me the eye, I answered. I don't want to encourage him.
Well, that get-up ought to change his mind, she laughed. Now eat up, you hear?
Yes, ma'am, I said, my bland face crunching on shredded wheat. The mask is working, I thought. It'll protect me.
I like your dress,
Peavy Lawson said as I walked through the classroom door. With my new face, emotionless as a corpse, I walked right by him. Thank you, I said matter-of-factly, knowing that frogs, like him, were sincere. They didn't lie.
I like your ponytail, he said.
I sat down, this time not bothering to thank him. Mrs. Stilton glanced up from her roll book. Aren't you the pretty one, she said, dressed all in brown. Thank you, I answered. A smirk had settled into the corners of her lips. Laughter played in her eyes. You look pretty too, I lied with a straight face. I hated her poodle hairdo and her red polka-dotted dress. She cooed. What a nice thing to say. I breathed a sigh of relief. She eyed me, sneering slightly, and said, It'd be really nice if you meant it.
But I do mean it.
My rigidity began to disintegrate. Panic was pushing in. No, Icy, I don't think so. She picked up the little bell on her desk and rang it. Now, class, she announced, does Icy Sparks really think I look pretty?
Emma Richards smiled and said, But you do look pretty, Mrs. Stilton.
That's not what I asked, Mrs. Stilton said. Does Icy Sparks really think I look pretty? Emma Richards didn't answer.
Only Icy knows for sure,
Lucy Daniels said. Lane Carlson tittered nervously.
Icy lies sometimes, Erwin Leach said. She called me stupid when I told her Harlan was the capital of Kentucky.
Peavy Lawson raised up in his chair.
Icy Sparks don't lie, he said.
Hold on, class, Mrs. Stilton said, raising her hands. I heard a little story once about a Coke being dumped over poor Joel McCroy's head. I took several steps forward.
Please don't tell it, I begged. If you don't, I'll tell the truth.
She nodded and folded her arms in front of her.
No, I don't think you look pretty, I stuttered. I can't stand red polka dots.
Thank you, Icy, she said coldly. It takes courage to speak the truth. If you're going to lie, it's best to stay quiet. Class, did you hear that?
Yes, ma'am, the class said.
Repeat, she demanded.
If you're going to lie, it's best to stay quiet, the class responded.
Thank you, Mrs. Stilton said. Icy here is good for a lesson a day.
Thank you, the class repeated. Icy here is good for a lesson a day.
No, not that, Mrs. Stilton snapped. You don't have to repeat that. The class was silent. I tightened my jaw, pressed my lips together, and narrowed my eyes. I threw back my head and stood up straight. I popped out my eyes, a huge bullfrog pop, shook loose my stiff face, opened wide my mouth, and said, Were you telling the truth when you said I looked pretty? Mrs. Stilton grabbed the top of her desk and leaned forward. Between clenched teeth, she spat out, Listen here, little girl. I don't lie. You understand? My courage failed. I nodded. Mark my words, if you ever, again, call me a liar, I'll have you expelled.
Yes, ma'am,
I said. All the while, I stared at the purple veins on her forehead, throbbing heartbeats against her skin, and thought, so demons have hearts. After school, I decided not to take the bus. Instead, I ran all the way to Walnut Street to see Miss Emily at Tanner's Feed Supply. Closed for inventory, said the sign out front when I got there. Miss Emily, Miss Emily, I yelled, banging on the door. Hey, Miss Emily! I was about to run around to the back of the store where she kept the supplies when I spotted her round face, her breath fogging up the glass.
Icy gal, she greeted me, unlocking the door, the bell above it jingling. To what do I owe this visit?
Johnny Cake's voice came from the back.
Miss Emily, you want me to sort out these leftover bulbs?
Miss Emily cupped her dimpled hands around her mouth.
Go ahead, she hollered. I'll put them on sale for late planting.
Johnny Cake screamed back.
Yes, ma'am.
Now let me take a look at you,
Miss Emily said, closing the door behind her, holding me at arm's length, looking me up then down.
What's wrong, Icy Gal? She said. Are you doing any of those strange things we talked about?
I shook my head.
That's not it,
I mumbled. She took my hand and led me over to the counter where the cash register was.
What then?
She asked me. Beside the counter was Miss Emily's favorite chair, a brown leather Lazy Boy.
Get yourself a stool, she told me,
while she eased her massive body onto the plush leather seat. I grabbed a stool from behind the counter and slid it over the floor until it rested beside Miss Emily. I hiked up my left foot to the first rung, swung my other leg over, and straddling the top, sat down.
Johnny Cake,
Miss Emily shouted.
How's it going back there? You got one whole case of tulip bulbs, he called out, and two a daffodil.
That's good, Miss Emily said. Just keep on sorting.
I didn't know it was inventory day, I said, my head slung down. If you're too busy, I'll go. Miss Emily reached over and squeezed my hand.
Whatever day it is, Icy Gal, I always have enough time for you. You know that, don't you?
Yes, ma'am, I replied, lifting my head, looking sideways at her.
So tell me, why'd you come see me?
I cleared my throat.
My curiosity's getting the best of me.
Gently, she popped the top of my hand.
Come on now, speak up.
Well, I stalled. Impatiently, she drummed her fat fingers against the armrest.
Well, what?
She asked, annoyed. I told another lie, I confessed. Not like the one I told Joel McCroy. It was a different kind of lie, but still it made my teacher mad, real mad. Miss Emily pulled at her ear.
Well, Icy Gal, I can't say I blame her. You're not supposed to lie.
I scrunched up my nose and glared.
Well, she lied too, I fumed. She can lie with the best of them. She's the biggest liar in ginseng. In Kentucky, if you want to know. Why, she's the biggest liar in the whole United States.
Just because she lies doesn't mean you should,
Miss Emily said. I pressed my middle finger against my forehead, breathed in deeply, and thought for a second. Lies are tricky, I said. Everybody lies sometimes, you know, to spare a person's feelings.
Well, that's called a white lie,
Miss Emily explained.
A little white lie.
Yes, ma'am, I went on. What I told Mrs. Stilton was a little white lie. When she said I looked pretty, I said she looked pretty back, but truth is, she didn't mean what she said any more than I did. We both lied. The difference between us is she lied to hurt my feelings, not spare 'em, while all I did was lie to save my hide. Miss Emily shifted her weight. Beneath her, the leather whined. Leaning way over the armrest, she ran her index finger down the length of my nose.
You know what?
She said, winking.
What? I asked, returning the question.
I think you don't like this teacher of yours.
It didn't require much brain power for Miss Emily to figure that out.
That's the word with the bark on it, I sassed.
So why don't you?
She said, eyeing me.
Like her? I asked.
She nodded, the fat on her chin bouncing against her breastbone.
"'Cause she's mean,' I said flatly. "'She doesn't just tell lies. Her whole self is a lie.'
"'How's that?' inquired Miss Emily.
"'Cause she pretends to be syrup,' I explained, "'when she's nothing but vinegar.'
"'Well, don't you sometimes pretend to be someone you're not?'
Miss Emily opened and closed her mouth like a trap. I arched my back and aimed my eyes at her.
"'If I pretend,' I responded angrily, "'it's not 'cause I want to hurt somebody.'
So you're saying Mrs. Stilton means to hurt?
Yes, ma'am, I said firmly. Everything she says is hurtful. Every look she gives me is mean. She lets me know every day of my life just how much she hates me.
And do you hate her back?
Miss Emily calmly asked. I froze my face for a second, all of my anger solidifying in the taut pull of my features. Then, unflinchingly, I stared right into Miss Emily's sky-blue eyes and spit out the truth.
I hate her with all my heart.
Well then, Miss Emily said, her demeanor unruffled, we've got a problem.
I nodded, my lips shut tight.
You don't want to exchange your sweet nature for hers.
No, ma'am, I muttered, shaking my head. But it's hard. She makes me so dag-nabbed angry.
Sure it's hard, Miss Emily conceded. But no one ever said being good was easy.
My lips began to tremble.
Then I guess I'm about the worst person you know.
She pushed herself up with her huge arms.
Icy Gal, she said, pointing her finger at me. To me, you're the best.
Then before I could tell her how much I loved her, she was pounding across the floor.
Now how about I take you home, she went on. Your grandma must be worried. Poking her head through the doorway, she gave Johnny Cake a dozen more things to do.
"You're the finest assistant manager I've ever had," she told him,
waddling back to the counter, plucking up her car keys.
"Why, Miss Emily, you gonna give me a swelled head,"
he gushed. "I see," Miss Emily motioned me over, the keys still cupped in her hand.
"Have I ever told you how hard Johnny Cake works?"
She didn't wait for me to answer. Instead, she put her arm around my shoulders and answered her question for me. Miss Emily didn't know how to lie. I knew without a doubt that every good thing she said about Johnny Cake was true.
"I see you're gonna get caught," Emma Richards said one day during lunch. "Everybody sees you copying her and making fun of everything she does. One day she's gonna turn around from that blackboard and catch you."
"I can't help it," I said, chomping into an apple.
"When Mrs. Stilton flicks out that tongue of hers, my tongue has a will of its own. It's gotta do the same. When she screws up her ugly lips, my lips just naturally screw up too."
"You're gonna get us all into trouble," Emma said.
I chewed my apple and swallowed.
"I can't help it," I repeated. "When she whacks Peavy, my hand can't stop itself."
I spread my fingers apart and whacked the air.
"You're scaring me," she said. "If you don't quit, something bad's gonna happen. I can feel it."
I put down my apple and looked straight into Emma's eyes.
"I can't help it," I heard the tremble in my voice. "I don't want to. It just happens."
Emma Richards glared at me.
"If you don't quit," she said, "you're gonna turn the whole class against you."
"Why?" I asked. Her face turned white and her jaw stiffened.
"Because when Mrs. Stilton's mad at you," Emma snarled, "she makes all of us pay." "But I'm the only one she hates," I said. "Peavy Lawson gets smacked because he likes you," she said. "I already told you about Lane Carlson. His hands will be next."
"Lane ain't no friend of mine," I said angrily.
"He talks about you all the time," she said. "He's always bragging on you. I promise before too long she'll whack him too."
"You're wrong," I said. "Lane Carlson ain't talking about me. I ain't heard a peep out of him."
"Something bad is gonna happen," she warned. "I can feel it."
Mrs. Stilton walked by. I nudged Emma with my elbow.
"She worships idols," I whispered.
Emma raised her eyebrows and shrugged her shoulders.
"She thinks she's a great singer," I said. "This summer, she's going to the Vatican and audition for the Pope."
"You're a troublemaker," Emma sneered.
"She's selfish," I said. "She wouldn't give a hungry old man a piece of cake."
"You're a liar," Emma snapped.
"At night, she turns into a red-headed woodpecker."
"You're making that up," Emma said.
"No," I said, "it's the truth. She hops up and down the trunks of trees, always hungry, looking for something to eat, working hard for her food."
"Liar," Emma said.
"No, really," I protested. "I got this book at home all about her. In it, there's this one story about a mean old woman who wears a little red cap and a long black dress. She drapes this white cape around her shoulders. And since she's always baking, she wears a white apron cinched around her waist. She bakes, bakes, and bakes. She bakes enough cakes to fill up every shelf in Margaret's bakery. But she's so mean and stingy that she won't share them with anyone. When a poor, hungry old man asks her for a bite of cake, she makes excuses. 'This cake is too big,' she says, 'and this one's too little.' That's how mean she is. She won't share nothing with nobody. At the end of the story, though, she gets her comeuppance. All of her clothes, that little red cap of hers, her black dress, and her white cape and apron, all of them turn into feathers. And guess what bird she turns into?"
"I don't care," said Emma flippantly.
"A woodpecker," I said. "A woodpecker from Chicago," I added. "And she spends the rest of her life looking for bugs with those dark, squinty eyes of hers, and drilling holes into trees with her mean, sharp beak."
"Sure," she growled.
"It's the truth," I said. "The story's called The Old Woman Who Wanted All the Cakes. Miss Emily Tanner gave me the book, and she's an expert on everything."
"She's an expert on eating," Emma scoffed. "When she hugs you, she squeezes the life right out of you."
"That ain't true," I said indignantly. "She hugs me all the time, and I'm still breathing."
"Well, that's too bad," Emma said. "The longer you breathe, the longer you'll lie."
"I'm not a liar," I said.
Emma Richards tossed back her head.
"Mrs. Stilton ain't no woodpecker, and you know it."
"You wait," I finished. "One day, when we have white cake for lunch, I'll ask her. I'll say, 'Mrs. Stilton, if a hungry old man came up to you and asked you for a bite of cake, what would you do?'
You mark my words, Emma Richards, Mrs. Eleanor Stilton will answer. If he wants some cake, he can bake his own. After lunch the next day, while Mrs. Stilton read to us, I fell into a daydream and imagined her living as a woodpecker in the black pine near Little Turtle Pond. Her nose had turned into a hard, pointed beak. She was drilling into the pine tree, hunting for a little piece of white cake, her tail feathers stiff and proper, her little dark eyes spiteful and greedy. Mamie Tillman sat on the ground with her back leaning against the trunk and her stomach ballooning over her pants. Every so often, she'd throw up her arms. "Please, Mrs. Woodpecker," she'd beg. "Me and my baby is hungry. Could you spare us a bite of cake?" But the woodpecker wasn't touched. "If you want some cake," the bird trilled, "bake one yourself." I was enjoying my reverie when Mrs. Stilton plopped down the book she was reading, breaking the spell. "Now, class, in honor of Halloween," she said sweetly, "I've got a treat for you." Then she walked primly to the back of the classroom, opened the closet door where supplies were kept, and stepped inside.